BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
This is a download of Farming Today from the BBC. The presenter today, Anna Hill.
Good morning. Today we continue our pre-election coverage and hear what farming issues are being discussed in Northern Ireland. Also, is straw a viable and sustainable energy provider? First, though, today we're down at ground level to come face to face with a tiny bug, the weevil. They aren't evil, but they can cause serious problems for growers. It's estimated weevils cause losses of around £20 million for ornamental plant growers alone. The problem is, weevils are difficult to spot until it's too late. But now teams from Harper Adams, Keele and Warwick universities are trying to stop weevils in their tracks. Here's BBC West Midlands Rural Affairs correspondent David Gregory Kumar.
The vine weevil, not great news for gardeners, but for commercial plant growers, they are a real problem. They cause damage and they're pretty hard to spot.
I'm Joe Roberts and I'm a postdoc here at Harper Adams University. The larvae are soil dwelling, so you know they live in the soil, not very easy to see unless you start digging up plants, which growers don't want to do. But also they're nocturnal, so the adults do a lot of their feeding behaviour on the leaves during the night when a lot of people don't want to be working.
Oh yes, and vine weevils are all female, so just one vine weevil can quickly turn into an infestation. No wonder they cause growers damage worth £20 million a year.
My name is Tom Pope. I'm a reader in entomology at Harper Adams University. So what they really need is a way of more effectively monitoring for the presence of vine weevil within their crops, using a refuge trap to alert them to the presence of this pest.
So once weevils turn up in these refuges, these traps, the grower knows they have a problem. They can then get some of this. This is a block of 50 million freeze-dried nematodes, natural predators really of the vine weevil. Add them to water, drench the soil with this, and you should get rid of your problem.
Nematodes are effective but expensive, so this way you only use them when you need them. But the big question for the team here at Harper Adams University in Newport in Shropshire, how can you attract the vine weevils into your new trap? Well, you need a smell they just can't resist. Dr. Tom Pope again.
We have here a choice chamber where we can't ask weevils what they like the smell of, but we can record their behavioural response to different odours. So we're seeing which plants they prefer the odour of. They also, rather I guess revoltingly for us, they also like the smell of each other's frass, which is a technical term for insect poo, which is really digested plant material, so it actually smells rather similar to the plants that they like to feed on.
The team believe they now have a trap that's attractive to vine weevils both physically and also in the way it smells as well. And the end result, an early warning system for growers that means they don't use expensive treatments when they don't need them, reducing the big bill for damage from this little insect.
David Gregory Kumar reporting. This week we're focusing on farm energy, looking at solar panels, wind farms and bio or anaerobic digesters. Well, today it's straw power. Straw is a controversial crop to burn for power generation because it can be used for so many other things. It's a byproduct from growing cereals and is used for bedding and feed and is needed in vast quantities for overwintering livestock indoors and outdoors. Unfortunately, no representatives from companies running straw power stations were willing to talk to us. But Professor Patricia Thornley, Director of Supergen Bioenergy Hub at Aston University, was happy to. I asked her how significant straw is in the energy stakes.
It's relatively small in terms of the amount of total electricity we produce, but it's quite significant in the renewables mix. There are a fair number of straw ones, maybe three or four significant sized ones that would take straw typically from about up to 50 kilometres away.
So is there a surplus then of straw across the country that is used in these power plants?
Yes.
Or is it straw that could be used for something else?
Yeah, so if we look at the picture nationally, what you have is you have agriculture obviously producing a lot of cereal crop, and the straw being produced alongside that. Now, some of that straw is plied back into land in order to return nutrients to the land. Some of it is used for animal bedding. What you find is that in the parts of the country where there are less livestock that have the need for this, you end up with a surplus. So nationally, there is a net surplus and there is enough to feed the power stations. The problem happens when you try to break that down to locally. So if in a local region in one particular year, you end up with a weather pattern or a livestock pattern that means that you actually need more than you did the previous year, then you can end up with a shortage that is local. But nationally, we normally have a surplus.
Right. But living in Norfolk, there we have a local plant which does burn straw. There are a lot of pig farmers around here, many of them outdoors. And that sort of livestock needs straw for bedding. And the demand is quite high. If you have a wet year, the demand is even higher. If there's been a poor year growing the actual cereal crops, there might be less straw. So, in fact, the supply of straw to a power plant might be quite tricky in some years, mightn't it? And the pressure could be on to get those supplies right.
Yeah, and sometimes that may involve going further afield or using a different type of material. The thing is that if we look at this in terms of why we're putting these power stations in, there's obviously a very important climate agenda here. And the more electricity that we can produce from low carbon sources, then the better that is in the long term. And these power plants were put in order to be able to do that. They really contribute very significantly to the reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. As long as the straw is being produced in a way where we're not compromising other things, then that is sustainable. But if I look at it just from a carbon and environmental perspective, what we must do is return enough straw to land to maintain the nutrient level on the land and on the soil. And once we've done that, the remainder can go elsewhere. It can go to animal bedding. It can go to energy purposes. From the environment's perspective at that point, it makes very little difference.
Professor Patricia Thornley. Now, continuing our election coverage, today we're hearing from Northern Irish farmers. The border between the Irish Republic and Northern Ireland has been a key issue around Brexit, but does it figure in farmers' concerns? Bernadette Allen has been to OMA Auction Mart to ask about the big election issues facing people there.
My name's Ashley Campbell. I'm from the Gorton area. I'm a dairy farmer. Who actually knows at this stage with the hard border, south border, with the milk? Sure, a lot of the milk processing plants are all down south. Is there going to be a tariff for it going down? Is there going to be a tariff coming back up? Yeah, that's why it's just all up in the air at this stage, that we don't actually know what's going to go through and what's not. I don't think anyone's really that worried about the farmers, to be honest. It's just we're there, we're always there, and we'll be all right. Don't worry about the farmers.
Cecil Michael Wayne from Newton Stewart, and I'm a part-time farmer. I work with Pedigree Cattle, Charlie and Simmental.
What do you think are the main election issues for farmers here in Northern Ireland?
Well, the main thing is how farmers has always been subsidised here. Food has been subsidised, which is leaving it cheaper for the consumer. And at the moment it's paid on the basis of a single farm payment. And the farmers are worried after Brexit, will this continue or what form of support will the farmers get? There's been no positive indication of what's going to happen. They say they'll support the farmer, but they don't really know, and at least it's a bit uncertain at the moment.
And what about issues like prices for things like beef and sheep?
Well, we're about 30 pence behind the mainland, Scotland, for example, for produce. And that's not sustainable, really, because the price of feed and the production costs in Scotland would be actually less than they are here.
My name's Keith Maxwell from Ernie Strabane. I'm 35. This uncertainty is the whole big problem, I think. They all talk about Brexit being bad and Brexit this, but Brexit was never given a chance. It's uncertainty that's causing the badness in Brexit. It's not because Brexit hasn't happened yet. We're not out, you know what I mean? Well, definitely for me as a dairy farmer, the price of milk, the time you get bills paid and stuff like that, it's at the, like they're paying the same level now they roughly paid 20 years ago.
What do you think are the main challenges for farmers in general here in Northern Ireland at the minute?
Planning for the future. You just cannot. How would you reinvest in something where you don't know what's, you don't know what you're going to get? Bank loans, all the financial side of things are set in place for always roughly 10, 20 years. We don't know what we're getting in 4 weeks' time for our price, so there's no business we do what we're doing.
Farmers talking to Bernadette Allen there. Well, let's get an overview from BBC Northern Ireland's agriculture correspondent, Conor McCauley. I asked him, what are the main issues in Northern Ireland farming at the minute?
Well, there are lots of them, Anna, in both agriculture and environment here at the moment. We haven't had Stormont for more than 1,000 days. That's the main one. So there's been a real democratic deficit, if you like, here since early 2017. What that means is that important decisions that ought to have been taken have been parked because they're ones that really can only be properly taken by ministers and not civil servants. So, for example, we've had a public consultation on the future shape of agricultural support here, but that has been put on the back burner. We have a big issue with ammonia levels and how they're affecting sensitive sites, and that's impacting expansion of farm businesses, and that's heading for the courts. And we have proposals on a couple of options for a badger cull to combat bovine TB, but because whatever decision is to be taken is likely to prove controversial, I really don't expect to see a conclusion of that one until we have locally accountable ministers back. And then, of course, on top of all that, there's Brexit and the implications for the Northern Ireland agri-food industry, which is a disproportionately larger part of the economy here than elsewhere in the UK, and which has a particular set of issues because of the cross-border nature of some of the supply chains, especially dairy.
So there are plenty of issues there. But do you think some of them won't particularly be in play in this election when Northern Ireland voters go to the polling booths?
Yes, I think a lot of those issues probably won't be to the fore of the minds of voters as they step into those polling booths. But Brexit very clearly will. And there's a reason for that. Northern Ireland voted 56% to 44% for Remain. There are 18 constituencies here. 10 of the seats were won by the pro-Brexit DUP, one by an independent unionist lady, Sylvia Herman, who is pro-Remain. And Sinn Féin, which is also pro-Remain, but don't take their seats, well, they won 7. What that has meant is that Remain parties have complained that as the DUP is the overwhelming presence from Northern Ireland at Westminster, Northern Ireland's wider view on Brexit, if you like, is not being fully represented. So there's a conscious effort by Remain parties here to return more Remain MPs in this election, and that has led to some de facto voting packs, with certain parties standing down in certain constituencies to give Remain candidates a better chance against sitting DUP MPs.
Well, of course, in Northern Ireland, there are other factors than Brexit which influence the way people vote. Will that still be the same this time round?
Yes, and that's really as a result of our history here. Even though it's 21 years since the Good Friday Agreement, which brought about political settlement, if you like, after all the years of violence in Northern Ireland, politics is still pretty tribal. Many people still tend to vote principally with the constitutional question in mind, that is, whether you support Irish unity or the maintenance of the union with Great Britain. And that issue tends to trump virtually all others when it comes to big elections in Northern Ireland. It happens especially in constituencies where the electorate is spread pretty evenly between nationalism and unionism, and that does happen in some of our rural constituencies, one of which here is a very tight contest between Sinn Féin and an agreed unionist candidate. I suppose to some degree it happens in Scotland in respect of the independence debate and increasingly in England and Wales around the Brexit issue. But we've been voting in this kind of very binary way for a very long time here, and I really don't see a major change in that anytime soon.
BBC Northern Ireland's agriculture correspondent Conor McCauley. And that's all from us this morning. Tomorrow we'll hear about election issues facing Welsh farmers. I'm Anna Hill. The producer in Bristol is Beatrice Fenton.